I truly understand that, and I really respect Jim saying that. But at the same time, that's not my mindset, and I don't want that to be our players' mindset. We want to go, and we expect to win every game we play.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
That was Hugh Jackson as we kick off the second hour of Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. And we're very happy to go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline to hear from the voice of the Cleveland Browns, Jim Donovan. Jim, how are you?
I am good. A great day yesterday. Topped off with a terrific night. Very, very exciting.
Very exciting. So I'll take it you're happy with the hire of Hugh Jackson. Let's just get your reaction to what he did in the press conference and just your overall reaction to the news when you heard he was not going to New York and he would become the head coach of the Cleveland Browns.
Well, I got to tell you, Nathan, I go back to December 6th, okay, and when the Bengals came in here and I thought they just put on an offensive clinic on that afternoon at the stadium, and they won 37-3 maybe or whatever, and I think they could have put 60 up on the Browns that day. And I just and you know, maybe you and I had sat on one of our long flights maybe somewhere drifting over Kansas late one night into morning, and we talked about the reality of what was going to happen with the Browns at the end of the season, and you know, they were going to be sweeping changes, and Hugh Jackson's name was right up there early in any conversation about it. So I was very I have to commend them on so much, and them being this new front office organization, you know, and Jimmy Haslam and his wife Dee, and because the search and the way they did it was so organized, it was so timely, it was tactically correct. They got their people that they wanted to talk to. If it was a coordinator regarding a playoff team, they got in front of them at the proper time. They went back. They obviously designated that Hugh Jackson was their most their top candidate. They went back, got that second interview with him. And I was a little worried when he was going to go to New York. There's no question about it, because the Giants, I mean, that is a big, big job with a great quarterback sitting on that roster in his prime in Eli Manning. And if things go right there, that's a very, very, very comfortable situation and exciting situation for a new head coach to go into. But, you know, I just commend the Browns for getting the deal done. I think it's a great marriage, because I think Hugh Jackson wanted some team to come to him and say, hey, we really want you to be a head coach. And I think the Browns needed a guy to come in here and to get their guy. And, you know, it's just a perfect situation right now.
And Jimmy Haslam talked about it the evening he, you know, relieved Mike Pettine and Ray Farmer of his duties, that the needle was not headed in the right direction. And
right.
So my question to you is, with the promotion of Sashi Brown, the hiring of Paul DePodesta, the process with which you just talked about, and seeking out a guy that was coveted by other teams but chose the Cleveland Browns, are we slowly but surely tilting that needle in the right direction, but more so than anything, changing the perception of the Cleveland Browns as a franchise, at least with baby steps around the National League?
Well, I think so, Matt. I mean, I think it started, and, you know, how it plays out, it may be a great, great story. I thought that was really interesting when Hugh, in talking about the analytic part of this and the new front office and sitting in front of both Sashi Brown and Paul DePodesta, and how excited he was to be sitting in front of and with and hopefully working with two really intelligent guys, and how he then said, in kind of a laughing manner, but I think, you know, not only a message for the room last night, but for the rest of the NFL, that, hey, listen, we're going to do this now, and there's a good chance everybody's going to be doing this in a couple of years, and it puts you ahead of the curve. So I think so. I think it just all felt good last night. Sashi Brown felt good, looked good, sounded good. Hugh Jackson, you know, sometimes, and I go back to Adam Gase over the weekend when he was announced as the new head coach of the Miami Dolphins, and I was listening to his press conference from Miami, and I'm not putting him down at all, and I'm sure he is a brilliant young coach. But that is a very, very important part of the job, to get up in front of a press conference and exude leadership and command. And he did not do that in Miami, because he's like so many young coordinators. They don't get the opportunity to do that in that kind of situation,
right,
as they're coming up the ladder. Hugh Jackson's been in front of this. He's done this, been there, done that. And I think he had good people on his left and right last night. And I just really feel, Matt, that maybe the needle is, certainly for one night, and I think for 10 days in how this search was conducted, has started to really peg the right way.
Yeah, and it's the beginning of the turn. Winning is what will cement that turn and make it a reality as we talk with Jim Donovan about Hugh Jackson. And what were the things that you took away from that press conference beyond his undeniable charisma and confidence and belief in himself? But in terms of the themes, because we've had so many of these here in Cleveland, were there any things that really struck a chord with you that made you say, hey, this guy's got a different view on how to do this?
Well, first of all, I mean, I think he's a fun guy. I think he's an exciting guy, and I think that that's what he's going to fill his players' tank up with, that it's exciting, okay? It's a fun game when it's played well and when you enjoy playing it, okay? That was a football team last year that was not enjoying what they were doing, and because the results were so bad and they were so repetitive each and every Sunday, it just wears everybody down. But from the moment that he walked through those doors last night, and I hope a lot of people got a look at that scene in that lobby last night, because that was electric. It really
was.
Cool. It was a guy that really, you know, his first word out of his mouth was, wow. I mean, you know, and I think he realizes, he gets it. I mean, he gets where he is now. It's a rabid, passionate fan base that started with a small contingent of Browns employees last night, but it will continue, and he'll feel it the more he's around the town. So he gets that. He's felt it. He's coached against it. So he understands where he is. That's the first thing that really excited me. It wasn't like a guy that was told, hey, listen, this is a very, very, you know, passionate fan base, that he had a media relations guy brief him before he went down to sit in the media room in his opening press conference. I mean, he got it right away. But there was just a sense of, hey, listen, you know, this is going to be exciting. I'm going to evaluate my players. We are not going to accept any kind of leniency for rebuilding, and it's going to take time. We're going to go out there, we're going to play the game every Sunday, we're going to play to win. But most of all, it was just his understanding of the area, the tradition, and, you know, that helps being in our division, the AFC North, and right in our own state. And I think that is a major, major step in the right direction.
It definitely is, Jim. And my question for you is, based around what we heard from Hugh Jackson last night at his press conference, and really what he stands for and what he wants to build here in Cleveland, and also based around the men that made up the 2015 Cleveland Browns, how much carryover, or rather, how much change do you think will come about with Hugh Jackson, now the head coach, and now the new philosophy with Sashi Brown, you know, leading the charge, and a talent evaluator yet to be hired?
Well, that will be the next really interesting thing, Matt. I mean, I think that you have a high-energy coach. High energy when it's successful, and I think a pretty good amount of energy when it's not going well. I mean, I think that he loves his players up, but I don't think that, you know, he loves them to the point that he looks past bad mistakes or the repeating of mistakes. So I think he'll get in a guy's face, and I think that there'll be some discipline here too. So I think that, you know, it will be interesting to see how he puts this thing together roster-wise and what kind of players they all seem to agree on that they want. But I think the message should go out to Browns players that this can be a lot of fun now. This should be a lot of fun to play for a guy like this who's had a great deal of success, who's very, very, you know, obviously offensive tilted to the point that you score points in today's NFL to win. And to do that, you have to be very, very creative. I think that that's going to be fascinating to watch how quickly the roster changes. When that green light goes on, that you can start making moves, then I think we'll have a pretty good understanding of what kind of team he really wants to put together.
Yeah.
And if he can, you know, carry over and kind of, you know, take these players on this roster currently and make them the kind of players he wants on his team.
How great is it in your mind, and how big of an asset is it to have a guy now as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns who was the coordinator of the Cincinnati Bengals? He was the quarterback coach of the Baltimore Ravens with Joe Flacco and John Harbaugh. He's a guy who has schemed against and successfully defeated the Pittsburgh Steelers. In other words, this is a guy who flat out knows the AFC North and what it takes to win against the teams that the Browns must begin to beat consistently if they want to get where they want to be.
Well, I think it's really big, and he talked about it last night, the reality of where we live in the AFC North and how tough these teams are and how traditionally tough these teams are, even saying what we all realize is true, and that is that, hey, the Baltimore Ravens had a bad year, but there were a lot of, you know, exceptions there, injuries, that kind of thing, and maybe some bad luck, and they're still very, very good. And Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, I mean, Pittsburgh, as he said, is still playing, and Cincinnati was very, very good. I mean, one of the top teams certainly in the conference and in the league. I think that's very important, Nathan, I really do, to understand it, to have to understand already the meat of your schedule and playing each one of these teams twice. You need to be able to compete in that division. It's just the numbers game of what it makes up in your 16-game schedule. I mean, you have to be able to play against these guys, and you're living with them each and every year. They don't go away. Maybe next year you're going to play a different division when the schedule comes out, but you're always going to play these guys. So you really have to play against them constantly. You have to coach against them. You have to draft against them. You have to recruit free agents against them. I really do believe that's very, very important, and it's, you know, something that we really have never really had here.
Absolutely, and this is a guy, you know, we've heard from talking to people that is going to increase the profile and attractiveness of this as a destination for free agents and hopefully help retain the ones that the Browns do want to retain here as they head into the 2016 season. Jim, we talked about the division, and I think that's important, but one of the things that I think is equally important is when you look at the quarterback position and the situation, and Hugh's talked about it a lot already. Didn't really get into his thoughts on Johnny Manziel, but the reports are out there. What do you think about the chances of Johnny Manziel being a Brown in 2016? And if Hugh Jackson, who Mike Silver has already said, has a strong liking to a guy like Jared Goff, if you think that's the direction they'll go?
Well, on the Manziel part, I mean, first of all, I thought he handled that very, very well last night. I mean, he's going to be just like every other player. I'm going to evaluate him on tape. But I think, as we all know and have lived through, there's a lot of work to be done here. There's a lot of work to be done with this team, and everybody's got to pull in the right direction. I mean, that has to happen. All these little sideshows have to come to an end. They really do. They take up a lot of time.
Yep.
and too much time, certainly in Manziel's case, way too much time. You can underline it. So I would just think that for everybody, you really have to move away from that. I really do. I just think it has soaked up too much attention, and it just hasn't paid any kind of dividends in the most important spot, and that's on the field. But I do believe it's also realizing that the quarterback position has been so missing here for so long, and to have a guy not only that's an offensive coordinator, but that has done good things with quarterbacks, I think that that's going to really help the situation too. That's what makes the search and the final destination and selection so successful. What they did is that they really designated the right guy for them. And on the other side, this is the right spot for him, too, to come in and really claim his own quarterback and grow his own quarterback. And I think that that will make everything a lot smoother.
Are you surprised? Do you see this as in some ways a referendum and a positive referendum on Jimmy and Dee as owners and really where Jimmy Haslam has come over 3 years, admitting his faults, doing his due diligence, best practices, bringing in Korn Ferry, and then, of course, to have a guy like Hugh Jackson be so open, and then not only open but complimentary and receptive to Sashi and Paul Dee Podesta? What did that say to you about the top of this organization and maybe the perception of it?
Well, I'll tell you what, Nathan, I thought that started on Sunday night after the last game when Jimmy very honestly got up there and said, hey, listen, I take full responsibility for this. We're just not getting the job done. It's not for lack of effort, but for some reason, we're just not getting it across the finish line in the right way. And obviously, this thing, you know, was put together with a lot of thought and a lot of consultation and a lot of bright people, I think. And then they went out and said, all right, well, listen, let's start to change that. The first thing we can do is just go get the guy we want as the head coach. Now, I have to tell you something. It gets a little bit weary, and I'm sure for you guys too, when you tune in and listen to a lot of the gas bags around the NFL who come out and say, oh, my goodness, you know, who would go to Cleveland with that situation?
Yeah, 1 of 32, right, Jim?
Yeah, right. I mean, I listened to one of the shows the other night say there were two horrible franchises in sports right now, the Philadelphia 76ers and the Cleveland Browns.
I know exactly who you're talking about, and it hurt
me. That's stinging to all of us, but it's got to be crippling to the owner of the team, because it's not like he is an absentee owner who does not care about this situation. You could almost say maybe, you know, if there's a, you know, can you care too much? I mean, maybe you can care too much, but still, isn't that what you want? So I think that really last night, you know, I think that Hugh Jackson probably knew of the Haslams before this whole thing started, and I don't know if he knew Sashi Brown or I don't know if he was a baseball fan and followed Moneyball and what Paul DePodesta had done. But I would say this. He looked genuinely turned on by what he had been around.
Agreed.
And what he heard from them, to the point where he said, yeah, let's go. Let's get this done. So this is a big step for Jimmy and Dee, I think, who really, you know, don't get enough credit for what they do in the community, because on Sunday afternoons, the scoreboard doesn't light up the right way for them. But, you know, I just think it's time for them to really make a move, see it play out the right way, and then be recognized the right way, you know, of what kind of ownership they have with the team.
I think people looking at this situation would say there are two big pieces of the puzzle still left. Number one, the top talent evaluator.
Right.
And number two, the defensive coordinator.
Agreed.
What are you hearing on that front, Jim, and what would you like to see happen there?
Number one, the GM thing is fascinating, because I still don't know if I fully comprehend that, because they had put, obviously, the coaching search front and center in front of that. And I think that's going to be really interesting to watch how that happens, because it is kind of a different definition. And I don't know how that expands into what they're going to put into responsibility. But I think the good part, at least the start of this new thing, is that there were good voices. There weren't too many voices, but there were a number of voices in the room that I think, you know, that really collaborated. And I think that's the word we heard after that Sunday game against the Steelers, that there was going to be collaboration. And though it's still a little fuzzy, I think, because, you know, you're just not looking for the typical kind of general manager. You know, that I kind of like the way they did the head coaching search. So I have confidence in what they're going to do now, you know, as far as getting this general manager, chief talent evaluation kind of person to come in and help them out. And as far as, you know, him getting his staff together, Nathan, I have to tell you, I think that, you know, whereas so many first-time head coaches have such a struggle in getting guys to come and join them, there are a couple of things that will help you. Number one, he was a head coach before, and he's been around the block a lot in the NFL, and a lot of people think very highly of him. And number two is, you know, it really is only the second, maybe the third by now. I don't know what's gone on around the NFL today, but it's early on in these jobs filling up. And I think that was a problem for Mike Pettine. You know, when he got his job, he got it so late that he was the last guy to be able to get out there. And it gets a little thin in the herd when you're trying to find people to come and join you. So I think, you know, defensively last year it did not work. And that was a major disappointment. And maybe that's why we're talking, the biggest reason why we're talking about a new coach coming in here. So, I mean, you know, as far as scheme and things like that, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what, you know, that's how the roster shapes up, what fits you well. And I think that, but I do believe he will be able to attract, you know, very, very good coaches to come with him and then do their thing here.
I certainly hope so. Last one, Jim, you've seen this happen so many times, and obviously there's always the glow of the new guy, but to me, this feels different, and I really can only say that I've been intimate or close to it for three of them now, which is amazing given the brief period of time that I've worked here.
You're so young
to have had such
only
things.
Three, right, Jim?
But yeah, really, oh, man.
Does this feel different to you because they got their guy, just the way that they seemed aligned? Does this one actually feel different to you given the Hugh Jackson hiring versus certainly Rob Chudzinski, Mike Pettine, but any of the other situations?
Yeah, I really do. I think it is. It is very different. And the other thing is, because we've watched this guy, I mean, even the year that he was the head coach of the Raiders, we saw him. He beat the Browns. out in the Coliseum the year that he coached the Raiders. But certainly in his years in Cincinnati, I mean, we have watched this. And we've watched the Bengals, and we've watched Andy Dalton grow, and all of these Cincinnati offensive players grow. And certainly you point the arrow back towards the guy that's putting it all together, and that's the coordinator. And in this case, it was Hugh Jackson. So that's the other. That's another thing, you know, Nathan, is that, you know, we knew Rob Chudzinski a little bit because he was here, you know, but I think that, you know, and we sort of knew Mike Pettine, you know, a little bit maybe from Hard Knocks and things like that, but we've really watched Hugh Jackson, and I think that we've seen it, you know, more than we've seen other guys. To be honest with you, I mean, I didn't know a great deal about Pat Shurmur when he came here. I mean, and, you know, Eric Mangini had been here so long ago when he finally came back as the head coach. You know, I mean, he was breaking film down in his early years here in Cleveland. So this does have a different feel because it's just he's not a first-timer. We've had so much of that. And he comes from the division, and there's just such a comfort factor in knowing that he understands who we are and understands who our neighbors are around us in the AFC North. And I just think that that puts you a couple of steps farther along than if you're just starting and bringing a guy in that, you know, is really got to get acquainted to everything about the whole situation.
Totally agree, and hopefully it will be different, and we will have the results that we have been longing for on those long plane flights, Jim.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. We'll talk with you soon. Jim Donovan, the great voice of the Cleveland Browns, with us. All right, when we come back, we'll go back to the phone lines, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. It is Cleveland Browns Daily. It is driven by Liberty Ford. Yeah, boy.
I've been in two of these organizations in the AFC North. I've been in Cincinnati, and I've been in Baltimore, and I can tell you firsthand, there's nothing like the feeling of walking through these doors. Nothing.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford's Gern Wilhelm here. We've had some good stuff today. Jim Donovan was with us, of course. Heard from Josh McCown. We heard from Hugh Jackson, who we are expecting to have live in studio tomorrow on CBD. 216-578-0850. Let's go to Tyler in South Carolina. Tyler, how you doing?
I am good. I wanted to kind of ask to get to a question dealing with not taking a quarterback high, because I love the Hugh Jackson signing. Do you guys really view Andy Dalton as a top five elite talent in
the
NFL?
Absolutely not.
Well, and this is what I'm getting at. And I ask this question, I'm a Michigan fan. I am not a Buckeye Hawk. But I view Laquon Treadwell here in SEC country as, if Josh Gordon comes back and Benjamin, as a plug-and-play superstar. Why no idea about possibly looking at Cardell instead at the third round?
I want a quarterback that can read defenses and make throws from the pocket, and that's what you need to do. And I think Cardale Jones regressed this year at Ohio State. But to your point, Andy Dalton is not a top five quarterback in the National Football League in terms of talent. Yet here he is going on, you know, three excellent seasons, and then this past year with Hugh Jackson, career high, 66% completions, career high, 8.4 yards per attempt, career high, 25 touchdowns and only 7 interceptions in 13 games. So Hugh Jackson elevated his play. Andy Dalton is a guy, though, that is playing, at least this year, he is a guy playing like a top half of the National Football League quarterback, which is, that's my cutoff to think that you can actually make some noise.
So, do you think it's – I just look at – they gave some draft grades to guys, and I look at what Cincinnati has right now, and if you take just our skeleton, you know, we don't have a Jeremy Hill, but they have that Henry kid graded as a third-round grade out of Alabama. And, you know, I feel like Josh Gordon has the potential to be an A.J. Green, but Laquon Treadwell could be – I mean, finally we could have a can't-miss guy in the top part of the draft that we've been missing on so much.
I think the thing that we're missing the most, though, is a quarterback. And
right,
I think we need to get that guy first and foremost. I think there will be good receivers that can be had at pick 32. I really do. If you wanted to go that way, I think that you have a great opportunity to get a good player at that point in the draft. So I do think, for me, Goff is the guy that I like there. I'm a huge fan of Megaquan, and if you have an opportunity to get somehow Goff and him, I would be all about it, whatever that takes. I'm pretty sure the analytics would prevent it, but I do think that it would be a wonderful thing. When you look at this team, you need to have an offense, and with Hugh Jackson, you will, but you got to give him the tools. You got to give him the pieces and the talent to put those points on the scoreboard. So I think that's important. As for the running backs here, I really think Crow fits. He's not as talented as Jeremy Hill, but remember.
Or Giovanni Bernard.
Crow would have had an opportunity to go much earlier had he kind of gone. If Crow finished his career at Georgia where he was the SEC player of the year, maybe Crow ends
rookie
up being a rookie of the year. Yeah, maybe Crow ends up being a first-round pick or a second-round pick. You never know, and he'd have a different level, I think, of you know, polish when he
got
here.
I think your perception about him would be entirely different.
Sure. But I thought the last four games, guy averaged 5 yards a carry and was on pace for 1,200 yards rushing. That's solid. I think you have a skill set, though, maybe not as good, but the same skill sets in Crow and Duke as you had in Hill and Bernard in Cincinnati. So I think that's actually a position where the Browns are set up pretty well for what it is that Hugh Jackson wants to do offensively.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I wouldn't be surprised that since you have Crow, who essentially would be your one, again, with his road to the NFL slightly different than it would have been had he stayed at Georgia and not gotten into any off-the-field trouble. And then you've got a talent in Duke Johnson, who you made a move on in the third round. And I wouldn't be surprised if you know, with the accumulation of picks, that if Sashi Brown doesn't find a guy in the fourth to sixth round that can add young value, as you see at the running back position, because running backs in this today's NFL, they're a dime a dozen. If Hugh Jackson can develop a system, whether it's Crow, Duke, somebody else, or via free agency with value, you know, with young legs, they can fit in his system.
They certainly can fit in his system. All right, we are going to go to the phones again, 216-578-0850. Tony in Dover.
Hey, Wilhelm, how's it going? How you doing, fellas?
Good, brother. How are you?
Good. Hey, I just had a quick thought for you. Talking about the Browns now, I really like their hiring as well. But I was thinking, as far as the draft is concerned.
We apparently lost him, guys.
Oh, we lost him. Okay. Yeah. All right. Good.
I was waiting for the end of that, and I'm like, nah,
so was I.
He's gone.
So was I. Tony in Dover, we lost him. Call back, Tony. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will go back to the phone lines. Plus, hear some sound from around the nation, yes, as it relates to what people thought of the Browns hiring of Hugh Jackson.
I got that real good, feel good stuff up under the seat of my big black jacked up truck. Rolling on 35s, pretty girl by my side. You got that?
I do. But I'm going to do whatever I think is the right thing for this organization. Obviously, we're going to look to find the best coaches that we can in the world to come here and coach. And if that means that Hugh Jackson needs to slide over and give someone else that opportunity, then I will. But I know I will always be itching and scratching and wanting to do it.
Hugh Jackson talking about whether or not he would call the plays. I think he's going to call the plays. I want him to call the plays.
When you saw him get excited and like that long pause with him, it's exciting to like call the plays. I want to be the man. You know, he's going to call the plays.
I like it, and I hope he does. I'm excited to see it if he does, in fact, call the plays. That's what I want to see with Hugh Jackson. That's why he got here. Offensive coordinator four times in the National Football League, four different teams.
And I think that him calling the plays and collaborating with an offensive coordinator coincides with the process as a whole here in Cleveland.
Absolutely.
So it makes a lot of sense.
Collaboration. All right, we're going to hear some sound now from some of the national voices in the media talking about the hire of Hugh Jackson for the Cleveland Browns and what it means. And we'll start with one, if you missed it from yesterday, we'll start with one from Peter King, who was with us talking about whether or not this was a home run hire for the Browns.
It's a superb hire. You know, I would have hired Hugh Jackson in a heartbeat if I had an opening this year. And to me, I just think it's a great hire for the Browns.
And that has been really the consensus there in terms of the national opinion at NFL.com. They called it a coup that the Browns were able to get Hugh Jackson as their head coach.
I agree. And I think, again, to reiterate it over and over again, and we'll do so. It's a testament to D and Jimmy Haslam's willingness to create a plan, go out and execute that plan. And as you can see, when you plan ahead and you have systems in place with the right people, good things happen. And hopefully that's a sign of what's, you know, to come here in Cleveland.
Hopefully it is a sign. Dino, who else we have from the national stage?
Yeah, let's by the way, hi, guys.
What's up, Dino? How are you?
Yeah, good to be back with you guys. All right.
Good.
Let's go to former, he's now a Hall of Famer, the former NFL executive Bill Polian on ESPN's NFL Insiders. He was asked for his reaction to Hugh Jackson coming to the Browns.
I think, first of all, Hugh Jackson could have gone wherever he wanted to go. So to some degree, this is a little surprising because of the at least announced way that the front office is structured. So it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out going forward. I can't believe that Hugh Jackson, in demand as he was, won't have control of the 53-man roster.
And he won't. Sashi Brown has final say on the he's got the final say on the 53-man roster. We heard that yesterday.
And guys, did it sound to you like Hugh just wants to coach?
He does.
He's I won't say he's old fashioned, but he just wants to come in here and just coach football,
which is what it's about.
Yeah, and not worry about. I loved his face when Sashi Brown said, "Oh yeah, by the way, you're going to help us, get our personnel guy, Hugh." He's like, "Really? I got to do that? Okay."
He's like, "All right, let's do it. Whatever. Let's find a way." What else we got, Dino?
We got a bunch of sound here I wanted to play for you guys. The former defensive back from the Cowboys, now ESPN NFL analyst Darren Woodson. He was on the Russillo and Kennel show on ESPN Radio, and he knows Hugh. And what is Hugh's approach going to be as far as, you know, coming in here and evaluating players and going through this locker room?
If you know Hugh, and I know him pretty well, extremely intelligent guy. And he's not going to make the same mistakes over and over again as a head coach. If I've done it one time, next time I come in, I want it my way. And if his way is making sure his locker room is clean, and if that's departing with Johnny Manziel and starting all over, then so be it.
And that was one of the questions that he was asked a lot about Johnny Manziel. And really, he said, everybody gets a clean slate when I come in here. That's what he said to me. And he's going to evaluate him. But it's strange how many reports there are out there saying that Johnny Manziel has no chance to be here. And I think for the Browns, if they have identified that they have found their franchise quarterback as somebody that could be here available to them at number two, there's no reason to deal with distractions unless it benefits your team.
You're right. And I think being in this building the last 24 hours when, you know, reports started as this show started yesterday, we're now, you know, 24 hours removed. He's been introduced to, you know, the media. He's now been introduced to the organization as of 1 p.m. The one thing that I do believe Hugh Jackson's going to do, and you kind of can read between the lines, he's going to be decisive, and things are going to happen fast. A, the reason why Jimmy Haslam, Sashi Brown, and D Haslam made this decision is get ahead of the market, and you can see Chip Kelly's going to fall, Ben McAdoo is going to fall, who else is going to fall, you know, the Mike Shanahan, where Coughlin's going to end up. It's all going to happen in the next coming days. But Hugh Jackson has, you know, hours ahead, those 142 text messages ahead of the next coach, because it is a good old boys network and everybody knows everybody, or is, you know, you're, you know, one or two coaches removed from knowing everybody in the National Football League for the most part. So those 142 text messages, and you can tell he's going to act on those fast. He's going to jump on that film, get out of that suit, get into his Browns garb, start watching that film, evaluating the coaches that made up this staff, who's going to be retained and who's not. And I have a feeling that it's going to be Hugh's way. Because of this process that's in place and him wanting to win now, he's not going to want to look back all that much. And he's going to focus on what's ahead. And what's ahead is his staff. What's ahead is that evaluation of the roster. And that's why I asked that question to Jim Donovan. You know, what type of retention do you see within this roster? Because I think that moves are going to be made. He's going to have an opinion about a lot of the individuals that made up this 53-man roster and have a report in front of Sashi Brown very quickly.
Yes, he certainly will. Dino, anything? Anyone else?
Yeah, I want to play two more here for you
all
guys.
Right, perfect.
From a guy we've been trying to get on this show, Mike Silver. He was on after the announcement was made, Hugh Jackson coming to the Browns. Silver on the NFL Network really wanted to compliment Browns owner Jimmy Haslam for getting this done.
really give a lot of credit to Jimmy Haslam, who has taken some lumps from people like me included, and I think deservedly so, but they ran an aggressive search and were very proactive and went out and got a top guy. And this wasn't just about money for Hugh Jackson. He really wanted to feel wanted. He
was wanted here. That's what we heard, and that's what we – Jimmy Haslam – that's what we had heard all along.
Yeah.
He felt wanted here. The chemistry that they had, the comfort that they had with one another, the interpersonal relationships. And he said it's about people and process. And he felt that he had the right people here and the right process.
And something that I haven't heard yet, and maybe you have in scouring Twitter or the internet, is what are the terms of the deal with Hugh Jackson? Have those come out yet?
No, those have not been made
They have
public.
Not. Okay. Just curious. That's all.
Yes. All right. Last one.
Yeah, last one. And this is the conversation we're going to be having, you know, for weeks and months ahead, guys. Peter King, with the two of you, I took two things out of yesterday. One was obviously how, you know, Hugh Jackson, you know, was respected and Peter thinks it's a great move for the Browns. The other is what's going to happen with the quarterback position going forward.
He has told the Browns he doesn't want Johnny Manziel. Who could blame him? But I don't know that for sure. I've just seen it reported this afternoon. But obviously that's going to be an important decision. If I were him, you know, I would absolutely bring Josh McCown back, and then I would have McCown as one of my mentors for
right.
whoever, Jared Goff, Paxton Lynch, whoever it's going to be. But, you know, the Browns have to take a quarterback at number two.
So that's what he says. Quarterback. I've been fighting with some people on Twitter all day about this, about taking a quarterback.
My partner on the Bruce Hooley show is vehemently disagreeing of that notion.
What? That you need that
the Browns should not, cannot take a quarterback at two.
He thinks they cannot?
They can't.
Why?
Because he doesn't believe Goff or Lynch is deserving of the second overall pick. And Bruce's belief is also that, you know, the way we've chewed up.
Let me ask you this. If he believed that they were, like I've done my tape, plenty of tape study now on Goff, and I believe that he is worthy of that pick. And if professional evaluators believe that he is, that's what it is at the end of the day. If the Browns guys, talent evaluators, believe that he's a franchise quarterback, you take him.
No question. There's no question.
So he's just saying in his evaluation,
they can't play in the NFL. That they're not, that you can't spend the luxury of that second overall pick on somebody who might be worthy of the 12th overall pick, let's say.
I think if it's a quarterback and you think he's a franchise quarterback, you get him on your football team. If you don't think he's a franchise quarterback, you don't just take him because he's a quarterback. I'm not advocating that. I will say I firmly believe in the National Football League. It doesn't matter what the rest of your team is. You're not winning a Super Bowl in today's NFL without a quarterback that is in the top half of the league. And until you have that guy, you can't be consistently competitive in the National Football League. Houston had the best defensive player in the league. Over the second half of the year, they had the number one defense in the National Football League. They have one of the best receivers in the National Football League in DeAndre Hopkins. And they were in no danger of winning a playoff game, let alone winning the Super Bowl. Why? Because they didn't have a quarterback. You need a quarterback. There's no coincidence when you look at the teams that are left. What do you got? You've got Peyton Manning. You've got Tom Brady. You've got Alex Smith, who I would put at the bottom of that top 16 cutoff, just because he does have an unbelievable skill, which is taking care of the football. You've got Ben Roethlisberger. And then in the NFC, you've got Russell Wilson, Cam Newton, Aaron Rodgers, and Carson Palmer. It's a quarterback league.
Yes.
Period. It's a quarterback league. And so that's why I don't – so he doesn't disagree with what I'm saying.
No.
What he disagrees with is in his mind as a talent evaluator, he doesn't believe that Jared Goff is worthy of that pick. I'd be curious to hear why. I think Jared Goff has everything you're looking for in a quarterback. Is he an Andrew Luck prospect? Absolutely not, but he certainly shows the – first of all, he's got the work ethic. He's a film junkie. He shows the vision. He can work the entire field, the decision-making. He's incredibly accurate, and amongst all the prospects in this draft, he is by far, statistically speaking and analytically speaking, the most accurate at both the short, intermediate, and deep levels of any of the top quarterbacks. His footwork is phenomenal and is pro quality, and he's a pro style pocket passer. He played in the bear raid offense, but his traits translate very well to working from the pocket in the NFL. And they say the most important throw, the opposite hash sideline throw, he is by far the best in this class at doing it. I think he's got more physical gifts than Theodore, who I loved, similar to his makeup. I call him the love child of Theodore and Matt Ryan. And if you have that, I definitely think you can win in the NFL. And I, by the way, who is it? And the other notion is that, oh, well, one of these, because they're not quarterbacks, they're all of a sudden can't miss players. Go look at the top of the last few drafts for non-quarterback, quote-unquote, can't miss players. Jadeveon Clowney.
Miss.
Can't miss player. Miss. The tackle, was it Eric Fisher?
Eric Fisher,
he's
yeah.
been okay.
But he wasn't even starting in KC for
right,
a while.
He's not a franchise changer.
No.
So, I again, if to me, if there's equal ranking, if you feel that somebody's a franchise quarterback and you don't have one, that is the most important thing in the NFL. But I believe best player on the board. I believe quarterback, because of the importance of that position, is worth more than any other position. I don't think that's a question. I think if you look at the NFL, you see who the haves and the have-nots are for sustained success. The haves all have good quarterbacks. And I think it's just, I really think the NBA, it's that simple. And one of the things the Browns have been guilty of, when have the Browns taken a quarterback early, Dino? Since 1999. When have they taken a quarterback early?
Since 19, what, Couch was first.
That was it.
That's it. Everything else has been at that 22
They've waited,
spot.
Right. When are they taking the first quarterback on the board? They're not. And I think if you believe that guy, it is time to take a quarterback and get it going and put him with a guy who's done nothing but develop quarterbacks successfully in the NFL. Worked with a rookie, Joe Flacco, in Baltimore, got them to the playoffs. Worked with Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton just had his best year ever by far this past season. So I think that that is the way to go. But he's got to be worth it. And that's not me to say. I can love – listen, I think a lot of teams, if you redid the 2014 draft – when I loved Theodore, Houston's taking, by the way, not can't miss Jadeveon Clowney. They're not even taking Khalil Mack. They're taking whoever they decided they like the best out of Teddy, Carr, and Bortles, number one. And that's, I think, all that needs to even be said about the topic. If you Houston Texans, we got to redo that draft. We all know Khalil Mack is dominant, and we love Khalil Mack. And the opportunity to put Khalil Mack with J.J. Watt would be, oh, boy. But you know what? They're going to go back and redo that draft, taking a quarterback, knowing exactly what Khalil Mack is in the National Football League.
Tell me how you really feel about all this.
I just think it boggles my mind. It just boggles my mind. Like, the Browns are the absolute billboard for not having a franchise quarterback and what it means for success in the NFL.
Or lack thereof, if you don't
Correct.
Have it.
All right, we'll take a break. CBD. Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm here. Final thoughts after another big show. It's been a fun week, and tomorrow we will have it will be a Hugh day. We will have Hugh Jackson here on CBD.
Will the kid be here with you?
The kid will be here. Don't forget to go. What are you going to do this weekend? I did. Don't forget this weekend, you got to come up with your songs for CBD. It's going to be a new era of CBD beginning next week.
We should get it. We should throw... Once we get our... Oh, my God. Once we get our 5 each...
I'm excited about this,
Once we get our 5 each, we should ask Hugh for 2.
Hugh Jackson?
On his own. And throw him in the kitty.
We'll ask him tomorrow.
Yes.
We'll ask Hugh tomorrow. All right. When we... We'll be with you again tomorrow. Hugh Jackson live in studio, by the way. Ladies and gentlemen, coming up next, it's the Golden Boys. We want to thank Jim Donovan, Josh McCown for being with us today, and all of you. Of course, great work by Dino. For Dino and Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zgura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily.
Driven by Liberty Ford.